Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Tuesday edition of the show, and well, there's a lot to talk about on the NBA front. First off, MLK Day yesterday. We had games all day long, but the drama was a little bit high for the finale.
A lot of shenanigans in that Clipper Rocket game.
Isn't that something? If you missed this last night, there was some pretty intense battling going on throughout the entire contest between the Rockets and the Clippers. Capella got into it. Blake Griffin. It seemed like Blake Griffin received the brunt of a lot of it. Yeah. His leg sleeves were ripped. He got into it with Mike D'Antoni. There was some elbowing going on. To me, it seemed like Blake Griffin was really the guy that may have been affected the most. But it was after the game last night. Chris Paul takes two Rocket players, and they go into the Clipper locker room. And if you watch the broadcast of this game last night, Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal were laughing uncontrollably because they couldn't believe that the LAPD had to be called last night. I laughed at Shaq. He said, look, if I was there, if I was playing, you wouldn't have needed to call the police. Chris Paul's like 6 feet tall, goes into the Rockets locker room, and they really called the, or goes into the Clipper locker room, excuse me, and they really called the police.
A secret tunnel in Staples Center, a back hallway, was where they entered, apparently. And this all went down, and you had Blake Griffin playing dodgeball off the back of one of the Rockets players throwing the ball off of him. So, yeah, just a lot of craziness in that game.
Yeah, but that's a basketball move.
Yeah.
Maybe did it with a little bit more intent, but at the same time, it's a basketball move, so you can't tee Blake up for that.
Frustration with the Rockets is all that boiled down to, losing that game to the Clippers.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on in the show, but let's be honest here. I don't think anyone liked the Clippers when Chris Paul played.
And that's the team he built. That's the team he built.
Yeah, right.
That's the personality that they take on is his personality.
I think there was a lot of animosity for other teams from other teams going up against the Clippers. Look, they gave themselves nicknames, for crying out loud. And I don't know that Doc Rivers is the most likable coach in the league either. But if you flip this and you take a look at the Houston Rockets, is Mike D'Antoni really the most likable coach in the NBA? I don't think he is.
He's not. He's not a likable guy. And either is Doc Rivers. So you have a lot of... they don't like each other.
But I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
The NBA needs something like that.
They do.
And it really was... fun to watch. It was a good game.
I like watching basketball because, again, there's a, you know, they call it the golden age of the NBA back in the 80s, and then you go into the 90s, and you had Michael Jordan and the Utah Jazz. You know, the killer instinct. Karl Malone would put you on your back if you tried to go in and score on him twice inside the paint.
Yeah.
I mean, and Jazz fans know that all too well, and that's fine. I like that kind of basketball. And over the last little while, we've had like a fraternity mindset in the NBA, and you and I have talked about this. Last night's game goes against the fraternity mindset, and I'm completely fine with it. I like the rivalry in the NBA, but let's be honest, nobody in today's game is going to fight. Nobody in today's game is going to fight.
They're all fake tough guys.
It's a lot of talk. It's a lot of mental warfare. That,
and
I guess,
is what
you call it.
With Kyle Lowry and Ben Simmons the other day, too, where Lowry and Simmons pointing at you, then you see Lowry take off out the hallway, and Ben Simmons wanted no part of it.
Could you... Who's the guy that would fight in the NBA today?
I'd have to think of it for a second.
Exactly. That's where I'm getting at. Like, a guy, maybe Steven Adams.
Yeah.
I could maybe see Steven Adams going at it. Draymond Green is going to kick you in the crotch. That's what he's going to do. He's going to try to make it look like a basketball move. Kevin Durant's a fake tough guy.
Yes, he is.
I don't want to take shots at the Golden State Warriors, but I'm just throwing some of the names out there of guys that have been in some altercations. To me, maybe Steven Adams, maybe. But see, we have to think about this. Now, if you go back into the 90s, there were a lot of guys. I mean, Ron Artest there for a while. Ron Artest wanted to fight. He wanted to fight.
Yeah, he was looking for it, game in and game out.
Exactly. It didn't matter which team he was on until he got to the end of his career. But there were guys that were enforcers on teams. We don't really have that in the NBA today. I like it. I thought last night was very entertaining. Outside of that, the Utah Jazz looked like crap, for lack of a better word. They were not good last night against the Indiana Pacers. And if you followed the game at all or you watched the game, there's one play in particular that will stand out to me. Ricky Rubio dribbling about 17, 16 feet away from the basket, and the entire Indiana Pacer team collapses to the paint. They give Rubio the 17-footer, and he bricks it. And that's kind of the story of the Utah Jazz. Plus, Rodney Hood got booed last night. Your thoughts on that?
The Jazz were embarrassing last night. That's a game you can't lose, especially to a Pacer team. It's on a back-to-back on the road, and they come in, and they lead you the entire game. They work you over. And as far as booing Rodney Hood, I think it's uncalled for.
I think it's uncalled for, too. I think the expectations for Rodney Hood this year were very high. I have high expectations for Rodney Hood because I think that he can take that next step. Statistically, he's better than he has been, right, all year long. Statistically, he's been fine, and I think Rubio's enhanced that a little bit. Jazz fans are a little bit uneasy right now. It's been a tough go for the Jazz organization over the last year.
They thought that losing Gordon Hayward wasn't going to be a big deal, and I thought coming into the season, losing Gordon Hayward was a big deal, and that this team was going to lose 45 to 50 games.
Well,
because they offensively, they struggle to score points.
I thought it was a big deal to lose Gordon Hayward, but my point on the matter was, is he worth $170 million? I still don't think he's worth $170 million. I really don't. That's what the Jazz would have had to have paid him. But even though the Jazz are struggling, this is also important to note, they are getting more national attention this year than they were last season when they won 50 games. And that's because of Donovan Mitchell.
Yep.
And it's because of Rudy Gobert. So the Jazz are moving in the right direction. It is a step back. I think, you know, this organization was on the cusp of being really, really good. And then you lose Gordon Hayward. And I don't think you're starting from scratch. But it has been a forgettable season now, 42 games in for the Utah Jazz. We're going to talk more NBA basketball coming up in just a moment. Let's look at the schedule tonight. Only four games in the league. We get Minnesota at Orlando. Keep an eye on the Timberwolves. They are now the number three team of the Western Conference. I don't think they're going anywhere. And that's why the number one seed in the Western Conference is so important. Because if Minnesota does stay at number three,
You don't want to play them.
Not in the second round, you don't.
No.
And that's who Houston would have to get through if they're going to meet up with Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. Because Golden State's not going to let go of the one seed. And I think Minnesota's going to be a three. So that's important to note. Minnesota's been pretty good this year. They take on Orlando tonight at 5 p.m. We get New Orleans at Boston at 5:30. 7 o'clock tip-off tonight. Dallas at Denver. And then at 8 o'clock, we get Phoenix and Portland. It's a quick look at what's happening in the NBA. We have a great show lined up for you. We're going to talk high school basketball next segment. Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans will join us. We'll preview tomorrow night's game as we travel to Grand in Moab. And then we'll catch up with Jamison Welsh, talk some more NBA basketball, and we'll bounce around the national sports scene a little bit later on in the show. That's all coming up here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be taking a drive to Moab here on KOAL. We bring you Emory Spartan basketball. Big region game. The Emory boys team will be on the road taking on the Grand Red Devils. And if you take a look at the Region 15 standings right now, I mean, this is a highly, highly important contest. Emory at 2-2, still in fine shape to potentially grab a Region 15 championship based off what happened last week when Grand defeated South Sevier. Everyone is kind of beating everyone at this particular time of the season. Emory will look to bounce back from a loss Friday on the road against Manti. And joining us right now to talk about that and tomorrow night's game, we have head coach Todd Jeffs over the phone right now. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you for taking out the time to join us.
Well, it's always good to be here, Jordan.
Coach, we'll start by talking about the game this past Friday. The Manti Templars. We know it's a tough basketball team. We knew it was going to be a tough outing. Unfortunately, we could never really figure out the press in that contest, and ultimately it resulted in a loss. I think it's really that simple, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And from a coaching standpoint, I was really frustrated because we weren't executing anything that we had practiced against that press. We kept getting bunched up on one half of the floor and really playing into what they were trying to do. We didn't spread the floor. We didn't run anybody into the middle of the court, and that's two things that we were trying to you know, we had practiced and we were trying to execute. Our guys just kind of got the deer in the headlights look and got back on their heels and didn't do it. And, it, you know, we paid for it.
In this game, Coach, Manti gets out to a quick start. It was something like 12-2 right off of the bat. You guys settled down. Kyson Stilson got to the rack a couple of times, and before you know it, it was a 12-10 ball game. And I thought that, okay, you guys have figured it out. You settled down. You kind of withstood that first blow on the road. Then after that, Manti really took control for about the next 7 minutes. And after that, it was a fairly even game. But there was about a seven-minute span between the first and second quarters in which this thing kind of got out of hand.
Well, it really did. And you know, the big thing there was our turnovers. I think we probably had 10 or 12 possessions in that time you're talking about, and I think we probably only got two shots up at that, in those times. And, you know, it's just difficult to play that way. It's impossible to play that way, not getting any shots. And so it just really, really hurt our attack plan and everything about it when you turn the ball over that much and they're shooting layups and you're not getting shots.
Yeah, and there were even times in this game where you guys really did to find some sort of rhythm offensively. Kyson Stilson was pretty good in this game, Coach. Despite the loss, I think he finished with 25 points.
Yeah, he, you know, I thought he really did a nice job. I thought he got to the basket a little bit and did some nice things there. But the one thing the last two games that he's really picked up on is offensive rebounding. He's so wiry and so tough to block out that when he's got a nose to go rebound the ball offensively, he's getting us 3 points. And so I think he got us, you know, 10 or 12 points just off his tenacity there.
Yeah, Coach, when we talk about a young team, I mean, it's obviously difficult to go on the road for a young team, especially in some of the places that we have to go this year. I mean, Grand is going to be a very tough game. South Sevier, you got to go to Monroe. That's a tough place to play. And then you look at Manti. I mean, it's never an easy place to play as well. When you have a young team and things start going wrong in the manner that it did on Friday night, how difficult is it from a coaching perspective to keep the kids from holding their heads? Because at times, I think it kind of got to that point.
It really got to us. We addressed that last night in practice. It was really obvious, and we've got, like you said, a young bunch, but it's so frustrating because as well as we shoot the ball, a 10 or a 12-point deficit is nothing. You know, that's 3 or 4 trips up the floor. But I think our guys look at the scoreboard and say, holy cow, we're down 15 or 20 points, and we hang our head and play with a low level of confidence, and we just shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, it's worked the other way in our advantage a few games. I think Grantsville, we came out and, you know, really punched them in the mouth early and got up 10, and all of a sudden we're confident and we're moving the ball and we're shooting the ball well. And I think North San Pete was a game very similar to that, where we just, you know, we got up and our confidence level rises. And that's something that we talk about in practice, and we're trying to make improvements where our guys are, you know, being a little bit more consistent and not letting the score dictate our attitude and our demeanor. And I think, you know, with a young team, it's to be expected a little bit, but at this point in the season, you know, there's no young teams. Even though you might be playing sophomores and juniors, I mean, they've got 14, 15 games under their belt. It's time now to step up and perform a little more consistently, and I think that's something that we've got to do.
At one point in time in the season, Coach, Tyler Butler was leading the state in 3-point shots, and when you get into region play, I mean, you guys are well-scouted. Every team is well-scouted by this point, especially when you get to that second go-around. Everyone is pretty familiar.
You know, it's tough for him to get his shot off at times. His foot speed's not great, but, you know, the one thing that, and I've talked to him and our team about it, is that they have to guard him, and usually they're guarding him with a bigger guy. That pulls a bigger guy away from the basket. That should allow some bigger driving lanes for our other players and bigger kickouts. And you know, we shouldn't be that easy to defend. We've got 4 or 5 guys that can just drill it. And, you know, they can't stay out on everybody and cover the driving lanes, because we've got a couple of guys who are pretty special getting to the basket as well. And so we got a good combination of offense. It's just when we turn the ball over 24 times like we did against Manti, we just don't give ourselves a chance.
Is Kyson the biggest beneficiary of Tyler bringing a big man on the outside and opening up that driving lane? Has he been the biggest, I guess, the one that it's affected the most?
Well, he has been, you know, and I think Brax should take advantage of that a little more than he does. I think sometimes he gives his guy a move and shakes him and then just doesn't capitalize at the basket like he should. He's gotten some of those shots and missed a bunch of them, but, you know, he's young, but he's learning, and we just got to take advantage of some of those open spots in the middle. And tomorrow night against Grant, that's something that, you know, they're going to give us. They're going to, you know, they're really physical and they're really strong on the perimeter. But once you break through that perimeter defense, it should be, you know, some good sailing towards the basket. And so we've got to take advantage of it.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan boys basketball team. Coach, let's talk about tomorrow's contest against the Grand Red Devils. This is a team that beat South Sevier. This is a team that's had a lot of success. They've won their last three games, two of which have been at home. The other one was a non-region game against Monticello. But this is a pretty good basketball team. And you and I talked a bit off of the cuff about how tight this region is right now. You guys are at 2-2, just a game behind South Sevier for first place. Puts a lot of emphasis on this game tomorrow for Grand. I mean, it's huge. According to the standings.
Oh, it really is, you know, and like you talked about, our region's full of gyms that are tough to play in, Manti being one of them. Grand is right behind that, and then San Juan is a tough place to play. South Sevier is a tough place to play. You know, Richfield, who can't seem to find a win, and that's always been a tough place to play. And so, you know, we've got a young team, and we got to take them into Moab tomorrow night, and hopefully Moab's feeling pretty good about themselves after beating South Sevier, and you know, maybe they're thinking that all they got to do is show up to win, and they're kind of ripe for the picking. But we got to go do it. We got to go, you know, get off to a good start. I think the games that we've really struggled in the first quarter and gotten ourselves down, and we've got to do a better job of getting ready to play. And then we've got to, you know, obviously take care of the ball, which I don't think we'll see as much full court pressure, but that doesn't always mean that it's just a night off. We got to do a good job with the ball and get to the basket, make good reads, and then get some of those kick-out threes that we really like.
And typically, this is the last game of the year, or at least it has been traditionally over the last couple of seasons. We travel to Grand right at the end of the season. This year, a little bit earlier, but at the same time, it's such a tough place to play. For someone who's never been in the Grand Gym, I mean, really, the crowd sits right on top of the court. It's very loud. It's very small. It's a tough place to play.
It really is. And you know, they do a good job of getting their community out and their student body out. They support that team really well. And it's quite a boisterous atmosphere, and you know, we've got a young team that's got to go down and play through some of that stuff and just, you know, man up a little bit, and that's what we're hoping happens tomorrow night.
Yeah, they play a very different style of ball. I mean, you can't really compare it to what we saw from South Sevier, although, Coach, they have put up lots of points this season as well. They have four kids averaging double figures.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see that. And they're all kind of different type of players, you know. I think you've got the Schultz kid that's just kind of a banger, and he really gets his points from offensive rebounds. And the number 34, I can't think of his name, Hoppenstance or something like that. He's a post kid that can rebound, but he can also play with his back to the basket. And then they've got a couple of three-point shooters that are definite threats, Williams and Ward. And so it's, you know, they've got a good balanced attack, and they play their butts off. They just really get after it. You know, they're physical, they're strong, and they get up and down. And, you know, it's something that we just got to go down and play our game and slow them down as much as we can on defense, and then get our open shots and get back to what we're doing with the ball moving and catching those inside-out threes and shooting some of those.
From a mental standpoint, Coach, when you have a young team, how important is it to get off to a quick start in a game, like the first 5 minutes of a contest, or does that matter with a young team?
Well, it really matters with our team. I think that's something that we've tried to address in practice is we can't let the score dictate our attitudes, and that's what we've been doing. You know, when we come out and hit two or three threes early and we got things rolling, all of a sudden we're a pretty tough team to stop. And on the other hand, when the other team does that to us, we're really easy to stop. And so it's just it's kind of frustrating to deal with, because so much of our attitude has been, dictated by the game situation, and we've got to overcome that a little bit.
Well, Coach, definitely looking forward to the game tomorrow night against Grand. Again, thank you for taking out the time, and we'll see you down there in Moab.
Yeah, should be fun.
Definitely. It's one of those games, Coach, one of those environments that you always look forward to watching high school basketball. And you go back to the game last year, that was as close to a state championship-type atmosphere and intensity level as I've seen outside of an Emory-Carbon game.
Oh, I agree. You know, it's fun to be a part of those games, and our guys hopefully will be up to the task tomorrow night.
Let's hope. Coach, as always, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jordan, and thanks for all you do for us.
As always, Coach, it's my pleasure. That's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan boys basketball team breaking down tomorrow night's matchup. And, of course, you'll be able to listen to it live right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. You can also stream it at castlecountryradio.com. Get the live audio wherever you're at. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to talk NBA basketball. There were some fireworks last night. If you didn't stay up to watch it, the Clippers and the Rockets. Yeah, we talked a bit about this during the intro, but a lot of fun for a regular season game, to say the least. That's coming up next when we return.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes a strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're going to talk some NBA basketball here on Drive Time Sports. Yesterday, MLK Day, huge day. Obviously, historically, but at the same time, a very huge day for the NBA. It's kind of like the beginning of the season. We had basketball all day long. Started early in the morning, and it continued on throughout the night when the fireworks erupted between the Clippers and the Rockets. We're going to talk about that and a little bit more right now with our next guest, our NBA insider, Jameson Welsh, who was kind enough to join us each week. Jameson, MLK Day did not disappoint in the National Basketball Association. I know for Jazz fans, they would have liked it to have gone a little bit better, but needless to say, that's a footnote compared to what happened last night between the Rockets and the Clippers.
Yeah, that's what everyone's talking about. It took over Twitter. It took over the news. Like, that's what everyone's kind of talking about. It's going to be very interesting to see how it shakes out, only because, like, the Rockets play the Golden State Warriors on Saturday, and that's the first primetime game of the year on Saturday. So what's going to take place? So there is Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, who else? Gerald Green was involved. Clint Capella was involved. So if you start suspending people for one or two games, there is no Rockets versus Warriors game that's going to be worth watching, because you're going to have, most of the Rockets core players out. So it's a very unfortunate situation. At the same time, it's hilarious when you think about it. Like, when you sit back and look at it, NBA, no one's going to fight anymore. That's first and foremost. Like, no one's going to fight. Like, there's not going to be any fisticuffs. It's a lot of barking, a lot of loud talking. But at the end of the day, no one's going to fight anyone. However, it's really funny when you break it down. Like, Chris Paul, 6 foot at best, is leading the charge into the old locker room, going a different route and doing it, having Capella knocking, going to the front. And, Austin Rivers is involved. No one likes Austin Rivers for various reasons. Like, it's like, we can hear all the storylines. It's actually really hilarious. But the execution, it's really a bad short story movie.
Well, okay, so I'm kind of, I don't know which side to be on here, because I'm the guy that says I hate the fraternity mindset in the NBA, and I do. I hate it. I love the fact that, 10 years ago, there were teams that genuinely did not like one another. It made for compelling basketball, and I like the idea of one entire unit hating and wanting to beat and another, another entire unit. And I think we have that missing from the NBA. I didn't have that vibe last night. I think that these two teams genuinely do not like one another. Now, on the flip side of that, nobody has really liked the Clippers for the last 6-7 years, because this was a team that the NBA spoon-fed Chris Paul to this organization. They had never really accomplished anything, but they were Lob City. They were giving themselves nicknames. And I think players in the association took offense to that. On the flip side, I don't think really too many teams like Houston as well. So you have two very unlikable teams from the mass going at it with one another. I'd be lying if I said I didn't like it last night, James. I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoyed the fact that Blake Griffin got into a shouting match with Mike D'Antoni. I enjoyed the fact that there were, you know, elbows from Capella through going towards Blake Griffin the entire night. I love the fact that Chris Paul showed a little bit of a spark, like a hateful spark against his former team. I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it.
No, it was like, Jordan, look here, it was hilarious. Like, I'm telling you, sit back. So I was on a plane ride this morning, so I'm reading all the tweets and whatnot. When you sit back and look at it, it's really hilarious. It's more funny than anything, because we both know, we've covered the NBA for almost 10 years now. We both know guys aren't fighting. Like, guys, there's not going to be any drag down, fist fights, anything like that. There might be some loud talk in the background. Might be pushing and shoving, but guys aren't going to be swinging on each other. Like, that's just not going to happen. And we all know how NBA fights usually are over. It's usually over money, women, or some other petty disagreement. It's nothing really serious. But for some reason or another, last night it got real. And you, whenever you hear about guys going to the locker room, you know, that gets pretty intense. It's pretty funny. But the whole thing about the tunnel, some random tunnel, if anyone's ever been to Staples Center, they know that, you know, locker rooms are kind of, you can kind of get, like almost any arena, you can kind of get to any part of any room if need be. Like, all the rooms aren't that, there's no secret passageway or anything like that. But it's just the whole story is just really funny. It's more funny than serious. However, you cannot condone it as a league. You can't condone fighting, so I get it. But at the end of the day, it was hilarious. Like, it really was. Like, that's what, and that's the thing that makes NBA great, is that something like this happens, and it's not the end of the world. We're all laughing about it 24 hours or 12 hours later. It's not, oh my God, what are we going to do? Like, no, like, this is really funny, and we're all laughing about it while we're at work or we're at school the next day, instead of taking it too seriously and about to spin guys for five games and having a court case with the NFL would do. It's funny. It's entertaining. Like, NBA is the best entertaining sport there is right now.
Yeah, you know, as far as what led to the, whatever you want to call it, the invasion into the Clippers locker room, I would have loved to have been in the Rockets locker room when Chris Paul said, I can get us in the locker room. You want to go in the locker room? I can get us in the locker room. Let's go.
Right.
Look, I've covered more games than I could count at Vivid Sportome Arena. To my knowledge, there's really only one way to get into the Utah Jazz locker room. So you would
that's an old school arena. That's
exactly.
That's
it's an old arena. School. Right.
All the new arenas built the 2000 on, there's usually multiple ways, but the arenas, you know, the arena you're speaking about, the one in Phoenix, the one in Portland, those are a little older, so it's a little bit different. But I'll give you a funny story. T-Mobile here in Vegas, I got lost and stumbled into the Lakers locker room during preseason. I took the back lane, I stumbled into the back of the locker room. So these new arenas, a little bit different.
It's a funny story all the way around. It was a great basketball game in which the Clippers actually won 113-102. If we take it a step further, we go away from the drama in this game. Let's look at where the Houston Rockets are right now. They're 30-12, but they've played 500 basketball now for the last month. I mean, they really, at one point in time, we were looking at the Rockets kind of setting the pace in the Western Conference and the Warriors playing the role of that team that kind of just lies in the weeds. That's not the case. Is there legitimate concern in this Houston team? Because I am seeing flaws. I know that they don't have a deep bench. We're 42 games. We're past the midway point now in the NBA season. Are there legitimate concerns for this Rockets team?
Of course. Whenever you go 7 or 8 deep and you play that kind of system, there's definitely going to be concerns. Both of their two best players have been out for stretches this year already. Chris Paul's been out twice already. And, you know, James Harden's out now. He's scheduled to come back either Thursday or Saturday. But at the end of the day, like, when you play this kind of system, like, Golden State plays a very similar system. They go, like, 12 deep. Like, pretty much every guy on the roster can play or has played some significant minutes this year. They even started. Pretty much everyone on that roster has either started or has played over, like, 25 or 30 minutes. Mike D'Antoni, people talk about Tibbs running guys into the ground. Mike D'Antoni might be number two on that list. Like, Mike D'Antoni plays his 7 guys. And that's just it. Like, you know, that's a blowout or something. If it's a regular game, he might go to a third reserve. But other than that, that's all you're going to get. You're not going to get a full deep team. So when you play, when you lead the league in pace, when you shoot a lot of threes and you're exerting a lot of energy on offense, it's going to be very difficult for that to last going forward. So as you're seeing, yeah, they had the great start in the first, you know, fourth of the season. And then it tailed off because the legs aren't the same. You know, teams are adjusting. Teams are playing guys definitely running off the three. Now, they're still going to beat a lot of the bad teams in the league, but the teams that can do different things, you know, they can they can really stifle the Rockets. And if the Rockets aren't hitting threes, you can forget about it.
Well, let's look at this. Again, Golden State being the one seed. I'll tell you why that one seed is so important. If you're Golden State or if you're Houston, you don't want to play Minnesota in the second round. And Minnesota right now is a three seed, and they're going to float around that three mark. They're going to be around that three or four mark. Look, you don't want to play Minnesota in the second round. That's the last team you want to see before you go into the Western Conference Finals.
Well, here's the thing. Minnesota is an interesting team. I actually think Minnesota is the third best team out West right now. I think, all things considered, I think Minnesota, like, because I don't know if we're going to San Antonio. I have no clue, Jordan. I don't know if Kawhi's going to be healthy. I don't know what the rest of their roster is going to look like. They've been hit or miss for most of the year. I know what I'm going to get in Minnesota. I don't like Tibbs playing guys 45 minutes a night, but at least I know what I'm going to get. They're a very talented team that can make anyone, that can give anyone trouble. I think the spot, I think if you're the top three or four, you're okay. Once you get out of the fifth to the eighth spot, that's when it gets trouble, because now you're in a matchup to really, really struggle. But as long as the Rockets maintain that second spot, if they can stay in that second spot, they'll be fine, because home court is really good for them. And also, the Timberwolves are young, so I would still favor them over in a series. However, I don't know, man. Out West, I just don't know what's going to happen. It seems like someone's going to make a trade. Someone's going to do something, whether
right.
it's yes. OKC blowing it up, whether it's Minnesota adding a piece, the Rockets adding a piece, the Spurs. Somebody's going to do something to kind of change the landscape of that middle of the pack. But at the end of the day, the West is the Warriors and everybody else.
Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh, our NBA insider here on Drive Time Sports. We'll flip to the East. Toronto, Boston at the top, Cleveland at number three. And don't look now, but the Miami Heat have won 8 out of their last 10, and they're a game back now with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You and I had this talk off of the cuff. This Cleveland team last night, we got a good look at it. Golden State did not play good basketball. Cleveland is old, they're small, they're slow. That's the problem with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I don't know if Kobe Altman can fix this problem within the next month, because that's basically his time frame to get this team set for the postseason. Jameson, right now there are legitimately four teams in the Eastern Conference that I could see taking Cleveland out in a 7-game set, and I haven't been able to say that since LeBron James rejoined Cleveland. I see four teams that could take them out in a 7-game set right now.
And here's the issue. They're having stuff internally. They're having internal problems. You have a lot of guys on that roster that have gotten paid and have provided little results since they've gotten paid. Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, guys that have recently gotten paid. I just don't know if that roster, as we mentioned earlier, it's older, it's slower, and it's small, and you just don't win in the league as an older team. The league right now is all about space and pace, switching on defense, being active. They're just not active. If you look at the Warriors are a really good defensive team, but they get their hands on a lot of basketball. They deflect a lot of passes. They play the pass lanes well. They get unintentional steals just by being alert and being active, but that because their guys are younger. When you're older guys don't play defense. Like that's just, and that goes at all levels of basketball, whether you're in the pros or you're playing at 24-hour fitness or in a rec league or whatever. Older guys aren't there for defense. They're there to get up shots and be productive. So when Dwayne Wade has a little burst of 6 points in 4 minutes, it looks good. But on the other end, it's a struggle for him to get in a stance and guard his man or follow around Klay Thompson around a bunch of screens. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Cavs. They have a lot of decisions to make, especially when they don't know what LeBron's going to do this summer. They're probably going to end up moving that 8th pick. But if you're Kobe Altman, that's a job. That was a rough job when you took it. It's the reason why Chauncey Billups turned that job down, because you have to make a decision not knowing what's going to happen in the future with your star player. And also, the other guys on that roster, there's no guarantee Isaiah Thomas is there either. Then. So it's a lot going on there.
A lot going on. And when you look at what they've accomplished so far this year, they are 19-10 in the Eastern Conference. By far their worst mark in the past four seasons since LeBron rejoined this team at the midway point. They've lost 10 games already in conference. That's insane to think about.
Yeah, I mean, but also it's not, you know, it is and it's not. It reminds me, it's not as crazy as the year the Lakers had Dwight and Kobe and Powell and Nash. It's not that wild, but it's up there just because of an older team. Like, older teams, defensively, it's just so difficult, especially in this era. Like, if it was 10 years ago, they'd be fine. Like, they'd be a perfect team because that's how the game was played. But in this era where teams are getting up and out on them, it's tough because when you play against like Golden State, whoever gets the rebound can push it. And they push it at a speed where it puts your defense on the brink. And if you're already a bad defensive team and you have a guy that can handle the ball, whether it's to handle it to score or create for others, it really breaks your defense down. And they're doing it repeatedly. And that's just, I mean, it creates so many different gaps and so many different open shots and open lanes for guys. It's really difficult to win that way, especially when you're not shooting at a great clip. They only won one game in the finals last year, and that's because they set a record in the first half for points scored. If they don't do that, they get swept.
Yep.
And if they find a way to meet in the finals again this year, I would willing to bet that they will get swept.
Yeah, I really don't see them coming out of the East this year. But again, the next month, we have the trade deadline approaching. Someone's going to make a big move. Something's going to go down, which could change the course of the path in the Eastern Conference. I don't see Cleveland getting there this year. Jameson, it's always fun to get you on and get your basketball insight. I appreciate the time, and I know we'll catch up again next week.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
Definitely. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the KOAL Newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Set to close out this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Talk NFL football. Yesterday, we focused heavily on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Promise, a little bit later on in the week, we'll start previewing the AFC-NFC Championship games. But one team that will be in the AFC-NFC Championship games, the New England Patriots, again, to no surprise. But at the same time, the Patriots are expected to endure some massive coaching changes to their staff at the end of the season. It was reported over the weekend that Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator, will take the head coaching job with the Detroit Lions. He's been their guy for a long time. Ian Rappaport noted this as soon as they fired Jim Caldwell. It seemed like they wanted Matt Patricia. But then the other news that came out over the weekend, that Josh McDaniels would in fact be taking over the head coaching duties with the Indianapolis Colts. A little bit surprising there. And you and I briefly talked about this yesterday. Tennessee or Indianapolis, and which one would be a better fit for Josh McDaniels. I said I like the idea of McDaniels going to Indianapolis, especially if Andrew Luck is healthy. But I wanted to bring up Josh McDaniels once again, because here and around this area with Bronco fans, that's a hot topic, and Bronco fans do not like Josh McDaniels. His tenure in Denver was a hot mess. Remember, they started off 6-0, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Things went downhill from that point. Kyle Orton was their quarterback. Tim Tebow was sitting on the bench. McDaniels made a couple of questionable decisions on draft day. Why should I believe this is going to be any different this go-around with the Indianapolis Colts?
There's a lot out there that says it's not going to be different. So maybe he's learned, you know, being back with Bill Belichick, winning those Super Bowls, that he can take that experience and move on and take that knowledge and help Indianapolis get back where they need to be. I'd rather have the Titans job personally. I think there's more weapons there, because I don't know if Andrew Luck's ever going to be the same player again. And if Andrew Luck's not the same player, then you're stuck as the head coach of the Colts in a giant rebuild mess.
Let's look at worst case scenario. Say Andrew Luck doesn't play next season. Say Andrew Luck is never the same guy. Who does he have as his quarterback in Indianapolis?
I have no clue.
It's Jacoby Brissett.
There you go. His guy.
It's his guy. It's his guy. On top of that, the Colts will have the number 3 pick in the draft. I think for a very long time, we just assumed that Saquon Barkley would be the guy for Indianapolis. I don't think that anymore. And I haven't really put together a whole first-round mock draft. I think Cleveland is going to take Saquon Barkley number 1 in the draft. I really do. But at the same time, the vision, McDaniels can go into Indianapolis, and it's his own vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea behind this. And so I like the job for Josh McDaniels. As far as why is it going to be any different, look, he's not the same guy that he was in Denver. He's so much more mature. He took that job when I don't think he was ready. You know, coaching trees are so fun to look at. And really, you look at Bill Belichick's coaching tree and the success that his coordinators have had. There for a while, it didn't matter. I could have been an assistant coach on Bill Belichick's staff at 20 years old, and someone would have offered me a job at one point in time. I think that the NFL's evolved in their searching and their searches for coaches. And I think Josh McDaniels falls in that category. I think he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, and he's been on staff with Belichick for all 5 of the Super Bowls.
He has to be more mature.
Yeah, and he took that job with Denver, like you said. It was the first opportunity they threw out there. He jumped on it. It didn't work out, and I know his reputation is poor because of it. But the guy, since he's come back to New England after that, they've been dominant.
Yeah, and don't forget, he took the New England job. Remember, he left the Rams. He was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Okay, and he left when they were eliminated from contention in the regular season and took the New England job in the same season.
Yep.
This guy has been under Bill Belichick. He knew he had to get back to working with Bill Belichick. I think it's going to work out. Here's the bigger question with the Patriots, because Patricia and McDaniels are going to be storylines throughout the remainder of the season. If New England goes to the Super Bowl, this is going to be a hot storyline throughout the remainder of the postseason. Bill Belichick, is he now a distraction? He's the ultimate at playing down to the media, but is Bill Belichick now a distraction? And I think that's a fair question, because Belichick himself is rumored to potentially be taking, maybe be looking at the New York Giants job. Now, that's not going to happen. Pat Shermer's going to take it. But there were talks that perhaps Bill Belichick would be on his way out of New England. And at his age, at Tom Brady's age, would it make sense for Bill Belichick to walk away at the end of the season? I think that's a fair question.
It is fair.
And I think it's one that's going to surround the Patriots the rest of the way in the playoffs.
Yeah, if they go out and win this whole thing, go back-to-back and six championships, there's no better way to go out.
There's nothing else.
There's nothing else.
What do you have to prove?
There's nothing else to prove.
There's not. I mean, it's a no-win situation. And as far as who would be taking the helm, who would be helping him, who's going to be his coordinators, probably Brian Flores, Chad O'Shea. I mean, those are probably the two names that would replace McDaniels and Patricia. It's a completely different look for the Patriots. But Belichick could look outside the organization. Maybe Greg Schiano.
That'd be a great hire.
He's
love
there.
That hire, yeah. That would be a great hire for New England if they... Greg Schiano's a hell of a coach. And I know people don't like him in Tennessee, but if New England can get that guy to replace one of those other two, it's a great hire.
I think New England's going to be just fine. But this is going to be a distraction. If they get into the Super Bowl, remember what a distraction it was for Kyle Shanahan last year?
Yeah, it was a mess.
It was a mess. It was a mess. Because he couldn't officially take the 49ers job, but knew. We knew. Now you're going to have to deal with that on two sides of the football for New England. I think it could definitely be a distraction. Out of time on the show today, I want to thank Coach Todd Jeffs and also Antoine Jameson for taking out the time to join us. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Coach Vando and Coach Jones. We're going to gear up for another week of USU Eastern basketball, back-to-back road tilts for the Eagles this week. They're both going to join us on the show tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Coming up next, it's NASCAR Live right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Be safe. We are out.